The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Armchair Traveler. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the New York Times and the News International. But before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, please let me remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles that we'll be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. Today on Armchair Traveler, we feature a couple of stories from a popular ongoing travel series called 36 Hours. Now, these are periodically published by the New York Times, and we've chosen a couple of popular story destinations often frequented by travelers. And we're going to plan to have more in the future episodes, so be looking forward to those. Our first stop today, we'll spend 36 hours in Asheville. Yep, that's a well-known tourist destination located in far western North Carolina. Written by Shayla Martin, the article includes pictures taken by Mike Balima. And by the way, Ms. Martin is a former North Carolina resident, and she visits Asheville frequently. Now, 36 Hours in Asheville, which appeared in the May 4th, 2023 issue of the New York Times. Once a wellness haven for American elites in search of mountain air, Asheville, North Carolina has reinvented itself many times over the last century. In recent years, the city nestled in the Blue Ridge Mountains has become a culinary hotspot with multiple award-winning restaurants and an inordinate number of breweries. Art lovers will find much to savor in the River Arts District, and bikers and hikers will have miles of trails in and around the city to explore. In the downtown area and beyond, black residents are embracing their Afro-Latian heritage through tours and art collectives, and creative spaces featuring the work of indigenous artists acknowledge the region's ties to the eastern band of Cherokee Indians on whose ancestral land the city sits. Now Shayla Martin's 36-hour timeline begins. It's on a Friday afternoon at 2:30 p.m., and we walk the block. 70 years ago, Eagle and Market Streets, known as the Block, made up a prosperous African-American business district. The Young Men's Institute, now the YMI Cultural Center, was a cornerstone of the black community, with a library, athletic facilities, retail space, and classrooms. Though much of the neighborhood was destroyed by urban renewal policies, the Tudor-inspired Red Brick Center, built in 1893, is undergoing renovation and expected to open in its entirety later this year. Already, the ground-level retail spaces include Noir Collective, AVL, a black-owned boutique filled with artwork, jewelry, teas, soaps, and more, and Penny Cup Coffee, where a colorful mural by the artist Big Al Carter greets visitors. Nearby, a cultural center called Leaf Global Arts allows visitors to virtually explore music from around the world, play instruments, and occasionally enjoy live performances, all for free. Now it's 4 p.m., and we're going to celebrate Indigenous Artistry. Also in the downtown area, Weaving Rainbows, a new art gallery and creative space dedicated to Indigenous artists, works with artists from the local Eastern Band of Cherokee Indians, as well as Indigenous communities in Mexico, Peru, and Guatemala, with most of the works created by women. Here you'll find naturally dyed handmade weavings, clothing, rugs, whipples or ponchos, and more. This month, the team plans to open the on-site Beija Flor Botanicals Elixir Garden, a non-alcoholic bar of elixirs, $5, made from international and Appalachian herbs. 6:30 p.m., Dine Among Legends. An oversized portrait of the writer James Baldwin by the local artist Jenny Pickens greets guests at Benny on Eagle, a restaurant that pays homage to local African-American culinary traditions. As for a table near the Legends of the Block, portraits of four black female chefs and Eagle Street business owners from the 1960s and 70s, whose culinary impact is still felt today. The restaurant focuses on seasonal southern cuisine. Starters like fried green tomatoes at $12 are served with pimento cheese and tangy chow chow, while the fried catfish and collards entree, $24, served with sweet potato hash and peanut red pepper sauce is a must. Check out the night's featured cocktails or try the Mobini Blues, $14, with vodka, blueberry, lemon, and lavender. Now it's 8 p.m., and we're going to listen to live jazz on this part of the timeline, still Friday. Asheville is known for its music scene, and you can ease into it just steps away from dinner at the Foundry Hotel. Housed in three 19th century buildings that were once a steel factory for the nearby Biltmore Estate, the Foundry offers Gilded Age vibes with Art Deco-inspired furnishings and free live jazz most evenings in the Workshop Lounge Bar. Cocktails start at $12 and up to $15. And on Fridays, the Hot Club of Asheville Jazz Collective plays 1930 swing until 9:30 p.m. And don't be afraid to join fellow guests on the dance floor, they add. Now we move to Saturday. It's 10 a.m., and we're going to unwind at a Japanese spa. Just 15 minutes from downtown Asheville, you'll find the Blue Ridge Mountain views that so many come here for. In the late 19th century, doctors began praising the area's fresh air, some saying that it was a cure for respiratory illnesses. Today, you'll find yoga, salt caves, and aura readings to help you pursue inner calm, but nothing quite compares to the Shoshi Spa and Retreat, the Japanese-inspired spa deep within the Pisgah National Forest. It is known for its open-air private tub houses. Guests may soak in salt mineral tubs, $123 for 90 minutes, with tubside tea service for $24. That includes the spa's signature tea blend, raw unfiltered honey, and tea crackers. All soaks and spa packages include access to a wet cedar sauna and cold showers. 1 p.m., and we're going to blow glass and sip brews. Along the French Broad River, the former warehouses, mills, and shipping containers, is the River Arts District, a one-mile stretch of galleries and studios for more than 200 artists. If you visit on the second Saturday of the month, you'll find live music, workshops, and food and wine tastings. Visit the North Carolina Glass Center for a 30-minute hot shop glass and create a paperweight or drinking glass for $90. Then check out Foundation Woodworks for wooden kitchenware, sculptures, and jewelry. Nearby at the Highwire Brewing AVL Beer Garden, choose from 24 taps. Starting from $3 for a 4-ounce pour, among mural-covered shipping containers, while snacking on fried Brussels sprouts at $8, or smoked barbecue over cornbread waffle for $15 from the on-site Foothills Local Meats food truck. Now, afterward, play a game of bocce or pinball. Now it's 4 p.m., and we're going to explore Afrolatia, or Afrolatia. Coined by the Kentucky poet Frank X. Walker, Appalachia refers to the cultural contributions of local African Americans to the Appalachian South, which is often portrayed as predominantly white. With hopes of reinvigorating Afrolatia, Dwayne Barton, founder of the Hood Huggers International Tour Company, leads walking and driving tours, like the Burton Street Tour for $30, which explores the neighborhood founded in 1912 by Edward W. Pearson, a businessman and former Buffalo soldier, the name given to the members of the historic black U.S. Army regiments. Cliff Cotton, Pearson's grandson, greets tourgoers at the Burton Street Community Center with tales of his grandfather, who founded Asheville's first black semi-pro baseball team. The tour also visits the Peace Gardens and Market, part community garden, part outdoor museum. Now it's 7:30 p.m., and we're going to sample pinchos and bread pudding. Many visitors think that dining in Asheville must include a meal created by Katie Button, the James Beard Award-winning chef who helped put the city's dining scene on the national stage when she opened the Spanish restaurant Karate Bar de Tapas, or Tapas, in 2011. Reservations are sometimes hard to snag, so shoot for a table at the nearby sister restaurant, La Bodega, by Karate. The dinner menu offers Basque pinchos, including mignones, spicy mussels served with a warm baguette for $16, and a pescadito frito, fried anchovies with green peppercorn mayo for $14, or journey through pincho culture with the chef's tasting menu for $65 and an optional wine pairing for $35. You can save room for s'mores at $16 or bourbon pecan cheesecake for $12 at Crave Dessert Bar. That's a 5-minute walk away. And at 10:30 p.m., we're going to dance the night away. Known for its Sunday drag brunch parties, downtown Asheville's Beauty Academy also encourages folks to stay up late. The dance club and bar got its name from the building's former life as a beauty academy in the 1950s. But today, The LGBTQ-focused space welcomes guests to join Saturday night theme parties that might include a hip-hop vinyl party with a $5 cover, house or draft cocktails starting at $9, and they flow until 2 a.m. so you can experience the club's tagline, "The longer you stay, the better you look." Now we move to Sunday, and it's 9:30 a.m., and we're going to visit the Vanderbilt's not-so-humble abode. No trip to Asheville is complete without a stop at the Biltmore House, the palatial Gilded Age mansion built by George Vanderbilt in 1895. Built as the largest home in the United States, it comes in at a whopping 175,000 feet. A self-guided audio tour from $89 can feel stale if you aren't an architecture buff or particularly interested in the Vanderbilt family, but fortunately, the larger estate offers everything from wine tastings at the on-site Biltmore Winery to hiking trails and bike rentals to explore the estate's 22 miles of paved and woodland dirt paths. Through January 7, 2024, the Italian Renaissance Alive experience at the estate's Amherst at Deer Park exhibition space features light, sound, and scent accompanying projections of works by Michelangelo, Leonardo da Vinci, Botticelli, and other artists, all set to Italian opera. Tickets, by the way, including the Italian experience, range from $109 to $129. Now it's 12 p.m., noontime. Let's dig into a Southern Sunday brunch. North Carolina takes its Sunday brunches so seriously that the state passed the so-called brunch bill in 2017 to allow restaurants to start selling alcohol at 10 a.m. instead of noon. Asheville has no shortage of options, but for a true down-home brunch in your Sunday best experience, hop in an Uber for a 10-minute ride to Blue Ridge at the storied Omni Grove Park Inn. The spread at $48 is immense, with predictable items like omelets and buttermilk pancakes. But take a cue from local diners and make a beeline for the biscuits and sausage gravy, shrimp and grits, and fried catfish. Brunch includes a mimosa, Bellini, champagne, or Bloody Mary. Ask for a table by the window overlooking the mountains. So lots to enjoy and do, of course, in Asheville, North Carolina. Well, we're going to end today's Armchair Traveler. We're going to take our next 36-hour excursion, let me say it that way. We're going to head across the Atlantic to Portugal, where writer Seth Sherwood shares his time in Lisbon with pictures taken by Kerry Murray. Now, this article appeared in the April 20th, 2023 issue of the New York Times. You'll very likely hear many other languages than just Portuguese these days in the hilly, sun-worn streets of Lisbon, Portugal's capital, as millions pour in as digital nomads, service industry workers, homebuyers, and tourists. For travelers, especially in the summer, this popularity can mean long lines to enter the Castelo de São Jorge or to avoid a pastry from the Pastéis de Belém, which can almost diminish in the charm of the city's colorful tile-wrapped facades, centuries-old churches, and melancholy fado music. Lisbon, once a slow-paced maritime city, is in development overdrive, which has not been without discontent. The cost of living has skyrocketed, leading to public debate and protest about the city's future and to the cancellation of the Golden Visa program, which granted residency to foreigners who invested in high-value properties. Visiting Lisbon thus involves a delicate balance, enjoying one of Europe's most dynamic cities while being sensitive to the challenges that have accompanied its rapid boom. Now, some of the key stops include the Ark, a plant-filled restaurant that specializes in colorful, intricate vegetarian creations. And then we have the Grela Cristi, a nightclub that occupies part of the restored 18th-century palace, the Palacio de Grillo, and then Beto and Marvila, adjacent neighborhoods in an industrial zone, emerging hotbeds of art and nightlife. Now let's begin our 36-hour timeline. It's 4 p.m. and we're going to meet the two faces of Lisbon. The Lisbon of yesterday and today sit elbow to elbow in a sloping street called the Rua de São Bento. Climbing it from the intersection of Calçada da Estrela, you pass dusty antique shops, the Portuguese Parliament, and the Casa Museu Emília Rodrigues, a museum that bears the name of the Portuguese fado diva that is devoted to interspersed with establishments from the new creative class. Check out the mostly single-color fashions of the French-owned Home Corps boutique, where you could pick up an outfit comprising purple jeans, a green military vest, and tortoiseshell glasses. Farther up to the Chicot Lisbon Gallery, we have the specializing in melted-looking vases and meteorite-like sculptures by Japanese ceramist, while the Dystopia Bookshop sells two essential English-language guides dedicated to the city's history, Soul of Lisbon and Secret Lisbon, along with vinyl items, CDs, and more. Now it's 7:30 p.m., and we're going to aim for the top. Now head higher, the hilltop viewpoint at the Miradouro Senora de Monte overlooks an undulating sprawl of orange-tiled roofs, church towers, and stony squares with the medieval crenellated battlements of the Castello de San Jorge or San George and the Blue Tagus River in the distance. But the marquee attraction is the sunset. A Caprina or Caparina, which is 750 euro from the Maria Lehmann stand, enhances the feel-good garden party vibe as twilight approaches. And by the way, just for your information, a euro is around $1.07 U.S. So when I mention euros, you can kind of calculate that roughly same thing as a dollar. A wood-paneled bar in a restaurant that has lush green plants and hanging night bulbs suspended above is one of the photos that accompanies this part of the article. And behind this bar, a restaurant staff members wearing white and many empty wine glasses in front of the bar are liquor bottles. Now it's 9 p.m. and we're going to eat without meat. In a city awash in restaurants dishing out copious piles of pork, chicken, and sardines, light bites and meatless meals used to be hard to find, not anymore. Several ambitious vegetarian restaurants have sprouted in recent years, perhaps none more quietly elegant than the Ark near the Casilla de Soto District. Now, the potted plants and a tall banana tree adorn the airy high-ceiling space. This menu is filled with plants, kaleidoscopic and artful vegetarian dishes by the chef Joao Ricardo Alves. One appetizer presents multiple preparations of red beet, chunky pickled, crispy dried, served with delicate dashi and beef-infused broth, while kimchi tortellini with carrot puree and Indonesian chili paste is tangy, fermented, and fiery. Five courses without drinks cost you 70 euro per person. Now it's Sunday morning, or Saturday morning, rather. We moved to past the midnight hour, and we're going to party in a palace. The nightclub, Gala Crisci, is inside the Palacio de Guglio, a formerly disused 18th-century manor in the emerging Beto district that was once recently reborn as a restaurant, and more notably a magnificent nocturnal hangout. The dance party fills a maze of grand aristocratic rooms with period details like ornate moldings and parquet floors, coupled with laser lights, smoke machines, and a booming, eclectic playlist that runs from electro to disco classics. Within, black-clad night owls from varying decades of life drink cocktails running from 10 to 14 euro, while meandering through the warren of chambers, expansive gardens, and even a former chapel. Entry fee, if you reserve ahead via the club's website or arrive before 10 a.m., is about $8, or 8 euro, I should say. Again, that's roughly $8 to $9 U.S. Praco de Comercio, an 18th-century square that faces the Tagus River, can be a fun time during spring and before the crowds start to peak as you move into summer. Now, at 10 a.m., we can survey the market. And this is going to be on Saturday morning, I believe, that we take a look at this. And a patchwork of blankets and tables spread with the bric-a-brac of seemingly every Portuguese attic and basement. The Fiero de Londres Flea Market is also a citywide social gathering. And as you ascend the hillside from the Campo de Santa Clara, the quality of the wares rises too, shifting toward glassware, china, jewelry, and fashion. Keep an eye out for the vendor, Joao F. de Almeida's ace selection of classic Indian art house films on DVD, and you can look for his yellow van, Agata Naladra's military jackets, hand-painted with images of skulls and artists like Frida Kahlo and Salvador Dali, are also present. Then at 1 p.m., we can consume the Portuguese past. Tradition and simplicity are hallmarks of the hearty farmhouse and fisherman's fair ladled out at Pica-Pau. A newcomer in Principe Real with a special or pleasant back patio that reverently revives old-time Portuguese food. The place is named after a working-class bar snack of meat cubes and beer sauce. If grizzled stew sounds too adventurous, don't you like the way they put that? Consider crispy fried cod cakes for €6, or scrambled eggs bursting with asparagus, croutons, and white pudding, a type of sausage, for €8. Also worthy, the steaming stew of monkfish, shrimp, and spicy rice, a robust undersea medley. Lunch for two without drinks going to cost you around €50, and I calculated that to be about $56 U.S. Now we go to the 3 p.m. Beta Path to Beto. In Beto, or Beto, is how a lot of people would pronounce it, because it's B-E-A-T-O is how they spell it, and Marvela. Adjacent industrial zones, former warehouses and factories, are filling with startups, art spaces, concept stores, and microbreweries. The elder statement, a statesman, I should say, is Galeria Filomena Soares, a Beto institution since 2001 that represents noted international artists like Alan Sekula and Shireen Nishat. Take the stairs to the rooftop to see the curvy, ribbon-like glass wall installation by the artist Dan Graham. Nearby, Feed fills a hangar-size emporium with a funky and psychedelic women's wear and accessories, including silver disco boots by Golden Rouge and leopard print clutches from Saruka. 5 p.m., let's marvel at Marvella. The spirit of 1970s New York punk and glam infuses Little Chelsea Experience, a hybrid retail boutique art bar gallery where you can shop for vintage clothes, quaff wines, check out art exhibits, and attend rock and roll shows. It's just one of the attractions along a single Marvella block. You might also stumble into Galleria Francisco Fino, a gleaming white with two levels of exhibition space and roster of mostly Portuguese and Brazilian contemporary artists, or you can stagger out of the Trois Corvaux, an art-adorned beer hall selling its own craft brews. Now let's move to 8 p.m. and sample some tricky treats. A short detour from the noisy nightlife of Cais de Sodra. Tricky's features industrial decor and draws a lively, youngish crowd, lured by its natural wines and fun, eclectic small plates. There may be a mackerel wrapped in a lardo with a spicy peanut peppery chutney, Portuguese shrimp with stracciatella cheese, or a mashup of lebna, harissa, and pomegranate seeds with a kebab of celeriac hiding underneath, or celeriac, okay, there we go. I don't use that word every day, so I have to think about it. Anyway, the juicy and bright natural orange wine called Funky from the Douro Valley in the country's north complements and summarizes the experience. Dinner for two without drinks will cost about €70, cash only, by the way. A close-up of a bartender preparing a cocktail is shown in a photo. The drink has a flat disc with a hole through the center. It appears like a dried pineapple sitting on top of the rim of the glass. The bartender is adding a liquid via dropper. Now, let's go to Saturday, and it's 10 p.m., and we're going to do a little monkey mash where we're going to order a double here. Ready? Granted, speakeasy bars these days can seem as common as Starbucks outlets, but a speakeasy within a speakeasy, well, for that, hit Monkey Mash, a windowless underground cocktail haven with a tropical chic aesthetic located just off an upscale shopping street. Avenida de Liberdade. Start with a dope punch or dope punch, rum and coke chaka cocktail with some eccentric ingredients, including marigold, Szechuan pepper, and buttermilk, that make an aromatic concoction of €13.50. Then ask to see Red Frog. Now, hidden behind a wall panel, this velvety little meta speakeasy is elegantly outfitted and serves creations like the American Gangster, powdered cinnamon and cocoa on the glass to enrich the spicy sweet medley of Bolete Bourbon, Amuro, and Madeira. Book in advance at both bars. And by the way, that Madeira is going to cost you $15. Or €15. Well, that's at least $15. Then on Sunday at 10 a.m., go for the gold. It's a good viking. You can wear a collar of diamonds and emeralds, carry a diamond-encovered snuffbox, and read with a gold and sapphire bookmark. Those opulent objects, accumulated by Portuguese monarchs before the country's first republic was proclaimed in 1910, are displayed at the sleek new museum for Portugal's crown jewels, Museu de Tesouro Real, which opened last year. Next door, the former royal palace, Palacio Nacional Ajuda, also has a new look, an avant-garde facade of thick, white vertical bars by the architect João Carlos Santos. You'll find soaring salons filled with towering chandeliers, massive tapestries, marble statues, bearskin rugs, and even a painting of Christ, by El Greco. Combined admission is €13. Now it's noontime on Sunday, and we're going to ride the rails. Hordes of travelers line up every day in Martin Muniz Square to ride the venerable Yellow Tram 28, famous for its 50-minute journey across Lisbon and the points of interest it passes. And now, don't join them, right? Instead, as the writer tells us, board the nearly empty tram 12E from the same spot. Now, this features the same mustard-colored paint job, the same wood-lined interior, and the same creaky seats, but offers a more rapid, less cliché, and less claustrophobic sightseeing experience. Over roughly 30 minutes, it careens through the multi-ethnic Maria neighborhood, past the commanding views of the lookout point at Lago de Portas de Sol, down through the old Moorish quarter of Alfama, under the rectangular towers of Se Cathedral, with the urban grid of the Beza commercial district, and finally uphill again through the boutique-lined lanes of the fashionable Chiado neighborhood before dropping you at the terminus Barrio Alto, a lively area known for its restaurants and nightlife. The tickets are only €3, so that is not bad. Well, let's wind up today's journey with a story about Nepal's Rami Rita Sherpa, who sets a new record by summiting Mount Everest for the 27th time. His story, published on the web by the News International, May 17, 2023. Nepal's Rami Rita Sherpa, a professional climber, on May 17th set the record for the most summits of Mount Everest by scaling the Earth's highest mountain above sea level for the 27th time. Kami, 53, has beaten his own record, a government official in his hiking company said, adding the Sherpa surmounted the 8,849 meters, or 29,032-foot mountain in the morning on the traditional southeast ridge route while working as a guide to a foreign mountaineer. And according to Thanswar Garagi, general manager of the Seven Summit Treks, Rami Rita hit the top at 8:30 in the morning, local time. Rami Rita first reached the top of Everest in 1994. He has climbed the mountain nearly every year after its first summit. The only years he missed the climb were 2014, 15, and 2020, when no one was allowed to go up the mountain, either because of inclement weather or some other situations like COVID. He successfully reached the summit this morning, guiding a Vietnamese climber. Ming Ba Sherpa of Seven Summit Treks, his expedition organizer, told the AFP, which is a global news agency. So congratulations, Connie. What a great treat. Well, there we go. We have finished today's journey of Armchair Traveler. Hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll be with us next time. I'm Mike Edwards, and I've been reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, reminding you the content of the program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Armchair Traveler is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. Questions and comments can be directed to 919-832-5138. The number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.